Thank you for listening to the On Background podcast with Roberto Alejandro, available on iTunes and Google Play Music, and of course at onbackground.com, your place for news and discussions about hip-hop, poverty, and policy. I'm your host, Roberto Alejandro, and I'm joined today by Baltimore MC Tamar, who currently has two EPs out, Midnight and Midnight 2, both available on Bandcamp. Thank you so much for joining me.
Nice to meet you, man. My pleasure.
No. Thank you so much. Let's speak a little bit about the beginning of your time in hip hop. When did you first kind of come into contact with hip hop, and when did you first fall in love with it?
I would say in the '80s, definitely. My favorite song was the Rob Bass, "It Takes Two."
Okay, yeah,
that was like the first song I knew word for word. So
okay,
around that time, I don't know what year that was exactly, but that was a while back. But
yeah, that's pretty early.
Yeah, that was my favorite song.
Can I ask how old you are?
I just turned 34.
Oh, okay. So we're actually the same age.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just turned 34 a few months ago, back in July.
Cool.
So that helps me situate you in terms of, you know, what sort of era you came up in terms of hip-hop. I mean, is it fair to say then that, like me, your heyday was kind of like that mid to late 90s?
Definitely.
Golden era.
Definitely, the 90s. Yeah.
That phrase golden era is always complicated because depending on how old you are, people put it in a different place.
Right.
You know, for some people, it's like Kool G Rap, Rakim,
that
era.
Yeah, that's not me, though.
Yeah. Were there certain artists in that era, that mid to late 90s era, that were your favorite or that influenced you the most in terms of your own music?
Oh, my influences have always been Tupac, Nas, Scarface.
Okay.
Those are like my top three right there.
Okay. I mean, in terms of what I've heard of your music, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's conscious, but not in the way like a Talib Kweli is conscious, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's kind of more of a... conscious from the perspective of addressing like a grittier reality or being in sort of conversation with one, and less about like trying to make a point in the way that I think sometimes Talib Kweli's music or other conscious MCs is kind of like, I'm here to say something specific.
Mm, yeah, I agree.
What do you think about that aspect of rap? Its ability to be a sort of social observer and to offer critique through observation as opposed to always necessarily having to make it a specific conclusion that the critique is offering.
You mean like the difference between like a Talib's message?
Yeah.
I mean, I like it all. You're talking about Common, that type of stuff. But I think where they people don't really, you know, gravitate towards them is maybe it's too conscious, I guess people would say. I mean, I don't know, man. I've liked Pac and Nas more, their style more, because it's more direct. It's more they're giving you both sides.
Yeah.
You know, the world can be an ugly place, so we need to hear both sides, and that was always what I needed to hear, just more. And they were always more. I could just relate more to that. You know what I'm saying? You know, Tupac talked a lot about not having a father, and I didn't have my father growing up at all either. I could just relate more to that grittier style, you know, that they were delivering.
No, absolutely. And I mean, you talked about just a moment ago how, you know, you got both sides in the music of those artists, and how, you know, there's an ugly side of life,
right?
You know, especially when you're coming up in like an inner city community in America. Let's speak a little bit about, you're from Baltimore, born and raised?
Yes.
Let's speak a little bit about the Baltimore you knew coming up. What part of Baltimore did you grow up in mostly?
West Side. I'm more of a West Side.
More of a West Side person. Yeah. Did you spend time in East Side, or was it just mostly around different parts of West?
Really West Side. Also in Columbia, I spent time out there, but really not more of the West Side, yeah.
And I mean, how would you describe it for someone who didn't grow up in that era in Baltimore? You know, what was it like, the Baltimore you were coming up in?
You know, my childhood was pretty cool. I mean, the stuff was always there, the street stuff and all of that, but we weren't really exposed to it. I mean, I remember us just being outside, being able to play. The neighborhood watched over all of the children. You know? And we could stay outside without our parents watching over us, and we all took care of each other. It's not like that anymore. I really wouldn't have my children outside at nighttime by themselves. But I remember us 8, 9 years old just being outside playing. Yeah. Just playing, man.
When you say us, did you mean you and your friends or you and your siblings?
My friends.
Okay. Did you have siblings?
I had an older sister.
Okay, just the older sister.
She was way older.
Oh, okay, okay.
But yeah, me and my friends just outside. We weren't really getting in any trouble like that. Just having fun.
Yeah. When did the shift occur that you feel happened that, you know, it took it from a place where you could be outside as a kid to the point where now you don't even feel comfortable letting your own kids be in a similar situation?
I always talk with my friends about that and just try to pinpoint that time. I really don't know. I think, you know, I graduated from high school in 2000, so maybe things started getting a little crazy then, you know, around that era. Not sure, man, but it just doesn't seem that long ago when we were coming up and we were kids. I don't know. It just happened so quickly. And I think, you know, art is an imitation of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As the music got worse to me and TV got worse and movies got worse, so did everything else. It just seems like everything fell into place like that. So it's wild. It's really wild. The music is really taking a turn.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the year 2000 because that's more or less right around the time that the sort of first tech bubble burst in the economy, right? And then pretty soon 9/11 would happen and that would take an even sort of bigger hit on the economy. And I've talked to other people who like you pinpoint around that time as like a period when things got drastically worse. Do you think that, because obviously inner city communities have always struggled, right? Like that's why they're a thing, right? That's why they're we have a term for them, the inner city.
Right.
And do you think that the sort of economic downturn of that early part of the 2000s and that sort of jobless recovery that occurred during the W. Bush presidency, was harder on communities that were already kind of struggling prior to that?
It seems like it to me.
Yeah.
You know, I just remember that time. And then we were all, when 2000 was going to hit, everybody was getting all afraid and computer crashing this crazy stuff. But I don't know, man. It just seemed like things just became really crazy around that time. I just remember more of a peaceful environment before. I mean, there were always things going on, but we just weren't exposed to it, especially as children. I don't remember seeing a lot of things. Now they see everything.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned the fact that your father, you didn't know your father well, and so you had a single mother, and she was still able to sort of protect you from these things, even though, you know, they existed in the city.
Right.
And today it feels like, how do you, you know, pull that off? I mean, as a parent.
Yeah, I have two children myself, so one 13, one 3.
Oh, wow.
It's like a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. Is the 13-year-old a boy or girl?
Two boys.
Yeah. I mean, is that challenging raising, especially in this era, you know, where, you know, we have this, I mean, it's not a new phenomenon in terms of the police shootings, but, you know, increasingly we're thinking about that. Or maybe, you know, I suppose in communities of color, folks have always worried and thought about that. But it's in our face, even in those communities, in a way that it wasn't once before, just because of what cell phone video has enabled. I mean, are there strategies you feel like you have to employ as a father to keep your son safe at that age?
You know, I never wanted to be like the strict parent,
you know,
stay in the house type. I mean, he has to live his life and have fun. But, you know, I just try to just be there. Just be there. I mean, I think about it now. If my father was just there, we could have been, you know, much closer. Just being around, just being, knowing that he can call me whenever he wants to. I never had that luxury to pick up the phone and call my dad. Like, so my son can do that. And I let him know, just call me whenever you need to talk. Anything you need to ask me, you can do that. I'm here. So, and you know, I'm a young parent, so he doesn't have to look at me as like the old guy that doesn't know anything. Like,
that's
right.
On. And you're at least a hip hop artist, right?
Right.
I always feel like, as a hip hop artist who's a parent, you have to get more cred than like your average parent.
Definitely.
Like, you're actually cool, right? Yeah. By default. Like, other parents don't get that. But going back to that sort of that year, right, 2000 and what happened after, because, you know, you obviously have all those things we talked about going on in the economy and in the world in terms of 9/11 and then Afghanistan, Iraq. But you also have that sort of the ascendance of Napster around then, which sort of tanks the music industry and introduces rap to the ringtone era. And I feel like rap went through a period where it sort of lost its historical sort of focus on the album during that period, right? Like the era we came up in was marked by incredible albums. And really, you couldn't be thought of as a great rapper in that era without a great album.
Right.
Ringtones changed that. And to me, it felt like things started to recover. And now we find ourselves in this sort of mumble rap era. Yeah. And I was just curious, you know, because you mentioned that you feel like the music got worse over time.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you were referring to, or if that's one of the aspects you were referring to. But as someone, you know, we came up in a similar era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is your position also as someone who is yourself a rapper? On the whole, do you like it, or do you see it as sort of a new thing that, you know, maybe it's just for the newer generation, or do you feel it as sort of a degradation of the culture like P-Rock?
I don't like it at all. I can't even lie.
Yeah.
I don't understand what they're saying. And I mean, music is just so important to me.
Mm.
It's like if there's no message, I just can't. The storytelling is gone.
Yeah, the storytelling is
like,
gone.
And I'm a big R&B, like, soul fan as well. Like, that stuff actually influences me. I listen to R&B probably 90% of the time. I really don't even listen to rap music. So Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, those lyrics, I don't know. Nobody's really saying anything important anymore.
Sure, yeah. In terms of your other musical influences, describe them a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just feel like Stevie Wonder is just the greatest writer I've ever heard. Like, his stuff was so deep, man. And like I said, Marvin Gaye. I like that old school sound. I just remember laying in the car, driving home with my mother and her playing that stuff.
Yeah.
It just stuck with me. And now I hear it now, years later, and it's just, I don't know, it just hits your soul, man.
That's
soul music. I love it. You know what I'm saying? And you just don't hear that anymore. I'm not influenced. Like, I need, as an MC, I need to hear something that makes me want to pick up the pen and write.
Sure,
And this stuff doesn't make me want to write anything.
Yeah.
It actually makes me want to stop. Like, if that's what the people like,
where do I
fit in?
Where do you fit in? Yeah.
You know, so it's sad.
Yeah, I mean, I always wonder, you know, am I just sort of, at least we're like, a popular form of music is concerned, you know, because popular music is always kind of owned by young people, right? And so 34 isn't old,
right?
But maybe in terms of thinking about popular music, maybe I've just like become that old guy who's like, pull up your pants and cut your hair, hippies,
right.
You know, like, is that who I am now? And that's why I don't like this, or is it actually? I mean, certainly different. I don't know if it's worse, but for me, it's not what I'm used to. Maybe as generous as I can be.
Right, not what we're used to, man.
You know, even, you know, like I've been watching The Get Down. You know, I just finished watching it a little bit ago. And, you know, Nas has these raps throughout the episodes. And, like, I'm listening to what he's doing lyrically. And it's impressive, right? It's like I'm listening to, like, the cadence, how like the way he's like putting syllables together and like stacking them in a way where you're like, I think he's gonna run out of room here, and then he doesn't.
He's amazing.
It's incredible, right? And then I think of some of these like mumble radio hits, and I'm like, man, like, you know, some of that technical aspect is lost, I guess, is my concern. I mean, is that, as someone who actually MCs, do you worry that there's sort of like technical aspects of the art form that maybe aren't being grasped today?
Yeah, definitely. It's like they don't know their history. I don't know. There was one rapper who came out recently and he said he didn't know any Tupac or Biggie.
Yes,
I don't know. Like, every time I go online and I see that stuff, I'm like, how do you not? That's like playing basketball and you don't know who Michael Jordan is.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it doesn't make sense.
Dr. J, who?
Yeah.
You know, it's
like, if you don't know, then how? I just don't get it, man. But, you know, if the people are buying it, we have to blame everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, sometimes I think we also have to remember that there were like some shitty songs in the 90s, right? Got huge radio play, huge club hits or whatever, but that nobody spins nowadays because it's like,
right.
And so sometimes too, I don't know if like, am I getting worked up over something that's not worth, like, right? Like, these songs might be the song of the moment, but especially because a lot of these acts aren't putting out, like, great albums. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like in most music genres, it's the album that carries you, right? Like, part of why we still listen to Marvin Gaye is because he had incredible albums, right, like Let's Get It On, right, and What's Going On. You know, like, bringing those concept albums and putting them together. And, you know, same thing like the 90s. You have Illmatic.
Right.
It Was Written. You have Wu-Tang Forever, Enter the 36. You know, I mean, you have groups that have multiple great albums. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could go on that list. I mean, do you think that maybe some of this is just kind of like a moment in time as opposed to the, or is it hard to say?
Well, when I think about it, it seems like it's been going on for a long time. You got to remember when the whole Dirty South era came in, that was Lil Jon and that whole crunk sound. But the South is still relevant. And it, and then they act like we don't like the South. Like, we love Outkast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, Scarface is from the South. It's not like we didn't like their music. It's just that, you know, and now you can't tell who's from where. Like, I don't
know. Yeah, increasingly. Yeah, it used to be like, that's a New York artist. That's a, right, you know. And yeah, today you can't.
No, I don't know.
It's very difficult.
No, I mean, identity. No balance.
Yeah, there is. I mean, that's a good way to put it. Certainly on the commercial side. I mean, do you feel like in terms of underground hip hop here in Baltimore, there is more balance or no?
Oh, I really wouldn't know. I really don't listen to people. I don't know, man. Like, I really don't tune in. I've heard a couple artists from here, but nothing has grabbed me. Nothing. I'm really picky with music.
Sure, yeah.
It really has to hit me. You know, and I really don't know about the Baltimore scene too much. I mean, I know there's people out here doing their thing, but it's just not the kind of music that inspires me. It's just really hard for me to listen to a new artist. I try. I give everybody a chance.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, if it doesn't grab me, it just doesn't grab me.
No, I hear you. I mean, sometimes I struggle with, I mean, you know, and doing this sort of work that I do. I mean, I can't just be like, I don't feel like it. But a lot of times I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
right. And especially with like some of these younger guys, you know, and especially in light of the era that we sort of came up in, right? So like, if I, you know, if some kid comes out and I hear he's got a hot song and he's kind of like a street rapper, like my first thought is like, is he going to be better than Mobb Deep? Because if he's not, been there, done that, right? I've heard this before. Right. And if you're not better than Prodigy, I'm not going to be too impressed.
Right.
And so, I mean, I guess there's always a challenge, especially as we kind of move through life. You know, you're always kind of comparing to the past.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, right, things have changed. Baltimore today isn't Baltimore 1997.
Right.
Does there sort of have to be maybe room for current stories to be told in the current vernacular, even if it's not?
I mean, sure. I mean, I think that they act like we don't want to hear anything they have to say because we're older. And it's not really that. It's just, I think they just need to go back and just study, man, and study what makes you great. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of these young guys, they'll walk around with a Tupac shirt on.
Yeah, that's right.
But you're not making music that he would co-sign.
Yeah.
Doesn't really add up to me. Like, is this something that he would like that you're doing? Not that, you know, it has to be Tupac, but I'm just giving an example, you know?
No, definitely. And I mean, you know, I sort of asked the question not because I'm challenging you, but because I want you to like convince me that I should pay more attention. I know it's a hard sell.
I can't convince you, man. Like, I mean, we know, we hear it.
Yeah,
we hear it all the time. It's just not. If it doesn't hit you, it doesn't hit you. And I just don't know. They just have to work on it, man. Everybody has to contribute. I mean, the record labels, they play a part as well.
No, absolutely.
You know, the radio stations, they're playing it. So until we have somebody to stand up and say, you know, we're not going to do this anymore, you have to start speaking. And it's like so much going on in the streets.
Yeah.
We need a positive message.
Definitely.
Let's
talk a little bit about that. I mean, you mentioned influences like Nas and Scarface, Outkast. And, you know, you talked about wanting to present both sides, you know, needing to be able to speak honestly about what's happening in the streets and to be able to describe that, but to also have that other side of it where it's not just like, either glorifying the street aspect or acting like that's all there is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the themes that you've touched on in some of your music is revolves around this question of Black Lives Matters, right? And the question of violence in inner city Black communities and how that relates to this phrase that has become so prominent in our culture. Mm-hmm. And what exactly does that mean? You know, and obviously in terms of like the activist side and even the journalism side of reporting on Black Lives Matters, you know, there's that phenomenon of people trying to shut down that argument with the phrase all lives matter, right? Mm-hmm. And there's that whole debate. But at the same time, as a journalist in Baltimore, the only people who have ever said that to me, all lives matter, were generally Black people from poor backgrounds, whether they were still in poor areas or not. And so I feel like for me, that question is very complicated because it's not just like white people who don't want to deal with racism, mm-hmm. who I'm hearing that from. And, you know, in the work I do is, you know, I try to sort of document social conditions in the city, and I talk to a lot of people in the streets. And I get that there are some of those people who don't want to be doing that or have reached a point where they've realized this is not actually a good thing.
Right.
But then there's also those kids who are like 17, 18 still and think this is the shit.
Right.
You know, and there's not a lot I can offer that person. Like, if you still think this is cool, like, you're right. just going to have to rock with that till right. it goes how it goes. You know, I don't know what to say. And so, I was wondering if we could speak a little bit about this tension. You know, it's not specifically about that phrase, Black Lives Matters, but I think it's encapsulated well in that phrase. You know, how for you as an artist are you navigating that question?
With Black Lives Matter? Well, I did a song, Can't Keep Gunning Away, that was off of the Far Side's Can't Keep Running Away.
Mm.
And that was kind of my response to everything. And, you know, I said a line. Y'all say Black Lives Matter. Every time I see the blood, it's eyes that splatter. Like, you know, I just feel like, especially when the riot thing happened out here, mm-hmm. it's like people were waiting for a reason to kind of do something crazy. It's like it really wasn't organized. It's like you're sure, just destroying your own stuff, your own community. And no one cares. Like, they really weren't hurt.
Yeah.
And then since then, it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It seems like every weekend is somebody getting killed, you know what I'm saying, like by a police officer but we're still killing each other every day,
every single day.
I just don't think that anybody's going to take it seriously if we're doing most of the murder. So, I mean, all lives do matter, you know what I'm saying? Black lives matter, all lives matter, but we got to start really standing up and coming together, and, you know, it's got to be some type of change, man. Because it's really bad. It's just really bad. And it doesn't seem like it's getting better at all. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny what you mentioned about organization. Because on the day of the riots, there was a point where I was standing on the corner of North Avenue and North Fulton Street. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of watching looting unfold at these, like, random little corner stores. And there was a young guy there who, like, gave me a few comments. And one of the things he said is, you know, the only issue with what's happening right now is it's not organized, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is our protest, but it's not organized. If we could be organized, we could send a more powerful message, essentially, is kind of what he was saying. But there's always this question of, like, how does that organization happen, right? Like, I can't really think of anyone or any organization that has been particularly effective at, say, organizing the streets or even at really doing really, really, really effective broad community organizing just in poor Black communities or poor communities of color in general.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the prospect for organizing?
Better leadership. Mm-hmm. Need more leaders. I mean, who are the leaders now? Can you name them?
Yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, we had them before, back in the day, you know what I'm saying? Where's the Malcolm X? Where's the Martin Luther King? Where are those people? We really don't have the leadership. And it seems like every time we have somebody that's trying to put themselves in a position to be a leader, they kill them.
Yeah.
You know, if Tupac was here.
Sure, yeah.
Can you imagine, you know what I'm saying, his type of voice right now? Like, but they kill him. They wipe him out. So I don't know. It's like when you get that power, you know, so much jealousy now, but I think we just need more leaders, man. Somebody to step up to the plate and not be afraid. You know, with the whole, see, you got the Cam Newton thing now with, and the Kaepernick thing.
Yeah.
And people's beef with Cam Newton was like, at one hand, he was saying people are racist towards him. And then in another interview, he was saying he doesn't believe in racism. Like, people are like, what's going on,
yeah,
Cam?
Which
like,
one is it?
Are you for us or are you not? And then Kaepernick comes out and he does his thing. And then people are just bashing him. So
sure,
it's like
yeah.
when you take a stance, they throw you under the bus. And when you don't say anything, they throw you under the bus. So I don't know, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's sort of particular to the American context, but it does seem like in America, and almost regardless of what sort of community or social location you're from, this occurs, right? Like, people try to do something good and we just like pour dirt on them. And if they stop, we're like, oh, you gave up?
Right.
You know, like,
sell out.
Not fighting for me anymore.
Right.
Think you're better than me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that has sort of, that has particular consequences, I feel like, in places that are struggling, in places that, you know, suffer the sort of poverty that we have in Baltimore, right? Because when people who want to devote their energy to addressing these problems get beaten down, sometimes by the very people they're trying to help, to the point where they just are like, I got to do me and just sort of live my life and not, you know, try to have this fight all the time, you know, the community suffers and it loses an advocate or a voice, even if they weren't perfect, right? I mean, these are communities that don't have enough leaders that they can sort of sacrifice the ones that are at least trying. But, you know, what, I mean, to your mind, what drives that sort of dynamic, you know, where there is a kind of like tear people down, not all the time, but sometimes. And, you know, and I wonder if it's maybe driven by like being burned in the past. So like when somebody new comes along, you're like, let's not give this guy a chance before, you know, he just quits on us anyway.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, man. Some people will say it goes all the way back to slavery. But, you know, as far as, you know, black people, it just feels like we're always hating each other. I don't know. Like, when I'm out, like, I could be downtown. And, you know, when the whole thing was going on and they were trying to act like it was a black versus white thing, I never feel that way, though. Like, honestly, if I'm out in the city and it's a group of black people and it's a group of white people, like, I'm not feeling like the white people are going to do something to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more cautious of my own people than I am anyone else, even the police.
Definitely, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's not right, man. Like, I don't really know what it is. It just seems like we're so angry with each other. We don't like our women. We don't like, even at work, when I go to work, and they're always arguing and beefing. People want to fight. Like, I don't know what all the tension is about. These people just aren't happy.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm out and I'm on the train, I like to just sit there and just watch people.
Yeah.
And look at their facial expression. And it just seems like people are not happy, man. People look depressed. People just look beat down. And they want to take it out on the world. So we just, it's just hard for us to get along. It seems like it's always been that way.
I mean, do you feel like there's something that could be done? You know, whether it's sort of intra-community or whether it's policies that could be put in place to create a context where people aren't so fundamentally unhappy in the way you describe, where they're like struggling with so much that, you know, everything is at a sort of simmer and waiting to boil over.
Maybe we just need more events so we can come together, just more things to do, more, you know, the rec centers, and we can, you know what I'm saying? Bond had the kids do more things together. It seems like, even though today's technology, it seems like the kids are still bored. They have nothing,
nothing to do.
We had none of this stuff.
Honestly. Especially like when you think about the technology that exists today compared to like when we were teenagers.
Right.
It's basically magic.
Right.
Right? Like the shit you have in your pocket to us, like if you just showed up in 96 and was like, oh, check out my new phone.
Right.
We'd be like, holy fuck,
right,
this guy knows magic.
Right, right.
Like, how is this happening?
Right.
And you're right. Like, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine.
But yeah, I mean, I wondered, is there a sort of, one of the things I notice, at least in a place like Baltimore, is that there seem to be a lot of people who receive the message that you know, if they graduate high school, they should be able to find a job that at least allows them to sustain themselves. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was growing up in a very different sort of place, the message was always like, you need to at least go to college mm-hmm. to expect to have a job where you can sort of reasonably sustain yourself. And I wonder to what extent sometimes what has happened in a place like Baltimore is that, you know, people were given a certain narrative and, you know, not everyone, but a lot of them played by the rules and have nothing to show for
right?
I mean, does that sort of, to your mind, maybe influence some of that inability to come together and that sort of underlying, you know, anger or just stress that seems to be there?
That definitely makes sense. I mean, we were definitely told that, you know what I'm saying? You graduate, you go to school, and they say people who went to college are in more debt than anyone now. And, you know, sometimes people who went to school, they majored in something that they have no, they're not even in a profession like that now. And, you know, I see both sides. You know, I have a cousin of mine who went to law school, graduated from Harvard.
Oh, wow.
And he's doing well. But, you know, I went to college. I went for a year. I didn't graduate. But yeah, I think it does make people angry. You're not able to get a job. You know, minimum wage is what?
Yeah, it's
$8 or something. Yeah, no one can survive off of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, people are definitely stressed out, man. It's really, they feel hopeless. And then you rebel and you know, you do things that try to survive, but
yeah,
it's hard.
In terms of your music, is there a sort of hopefulness that you hope people will walk away with as a result of it? Or what is it that you want to convey, you know, relative to this situation that we're talking about?
I just want people to be able to relate. I feel like when I listen to music and the artists that inspired me, it was that feeling that they went through something or going through something that you're going through. And you look at them as like a star, and sometimes you don't think that they have emotions like that because they're on TV and they're rich, but they go through the same problems as us.
Yeah.
And it just made us feel good to know that, you know, they were going through a breakup or not having a father or losing a loved one. So I just want people to be able to relate. Like, you know, this is my story, and I'm sure there's somebody else that went through it. So they can be like, oh, well, he's telling my story. You know what I'm saying? It makes me feel good that somebody else has felt the way I felt. So I just want to keep it as real as possible. And, you know, I struggle sometimes because, you know, they want you to sit down and write a little radio hit.
Sure. Yeah.
But I have to stay true to my craft. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And I get a lot of love for it. Just being myself. I'm not trying to be anyone else. But I definitely want people to be like, you know what I'm saying? He's telling the truth. He's showing emotion, and at the same time, be dope with it.
Yeah.
You don't have to sell out and be corny, nothing like that. I mean, you can still be dope. Like, Nas is still looks young. He still can out-rap everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's in his 40s. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's still the dopest to me. So, and,
I mean, it's interesting what you mentioned, the vulnerability, because, you know, his last album, Life is Good.
Yeah.
Was, you know, basically an album about him sort of navigating that experience of, you know, an imperfect marriage and a divorce.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a very sort of intimate thing to share with the entire world, right? Yeah. Anybody who wants to know what a divorce was like for Nas can listen to this album. Right. You know, and I always thought that as much as he was sort of benefited by like the shock rap thing that he did early on in his career, which I suppose he still continues to do, a big part of Eminem's like rise to fame was the fact that this guy was like letting you in on his dirty laundry with his like his daughter's mother, his own mother, you know, his issues with substance abuse. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't a lot that you could walk away feeling like Eminem was hiding right after listening to one of his albums.
Right.
As an artist, is it hard to be that vulnerable in your music?
Sometimes. For example, I went through a really tough breakup with my son's mother. And, you know, when I sit back and listen to, because my thing is, when I do an album or EP, I'm going to write about specifically what's going on at that moment. Mm. So if I just went through a tough breakup, I'm probably going to talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, to certain people, you got to look tough as a rapper and not make it seem like, a female did this, broke your heart or whatever, but you just have to stay true. And I talk about my children. It's personal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Certain things that you probably wouldn't say in a regular conversation, but when I'm in that booth, it all comes out. It's therapeutic. I have to let it all out. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough, but I think people respect it more. When you look at all the great artists, it seems like the painful music was their best music. You know, when Lauryn Hill came out, it was like, and she was going through so much drama. Everybody loved that Lauryn.
Yeah, you
know what I'm saying? So it's sad that it has to be that way, that the painful music makes the best music, but that's because it's so real. People can feel it. Everybody's been through a breakup.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? You can relate to that.
Definitely,
you can relate to these things. So as much as everybody wants to act so tough and dance their pain away and be in the club, not everybody's in the club.
No, right? A lot of people can't even afford the club.
Right.
I mean, you mentioned the sort of tension of wanting to be vulnerable, but also sort of feeling that pressure, which there's no doubt exists, especially for male artists in hip hop, of like, you don't want to sort of come off soft or feminine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sort of going back to some of the issues that exist, especially in inner city communities, it's hard not to notice that a lot of the problems stem from really problematic definitions of masculinity. Mm-hmm. And both as an artist who, you know, strives to put themselves into their music in terms of, you know, where they're at any given moment, but also as the father of two boys, how do you feel about the way masculinity gets portrayed in hip hop?
It's, you know, it's like a constant male ego check every day, like especially in the streets and, you know, hip hop, you know, if you everything is keep it real. But that is what's real. You know, pain is real. You know, we all cry. We all hurt. And like you said, Nas did the whole thing about his divorce. You got to respect it, man. I mean, that's what's really going on. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I think about these artists, they have children too, but do you ever hear about it? Like, who's making a song about their kids?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I feel like even in like that sort of our golden era, you do have songs that are like mentioned where, you know, like the kids are mentioned, right? Like at the beginning of Juicy, Biggie's like, you know, to all those people who like call the cops on me when I was trying to feed my daughter. But that's not like exactly a whole song about his daughter, right? You know, it's like if you listen to Nas, you're aware that he has a child. But it's not like there's a lot, at least in his early stuff, that is specifically about, you know, say his daughter, for example. Mm-hmm. It's not that hip hop is without those moments, but it doesn't always seem to be a main theme, I guess. Is that something you try to do differently in your own music?
Definitely. I had a song. I made a song called Father's Day. Mm. You know, it has like the balance again. It just has to be balanced, man. And that's where, you know, R&B also comes into play, you know, because we had the balance in the 90s. I mean, you could turn on the radio, you could hear a hardcore song, then you could hear something else. Tupac did Dear Mama, Keep Your Head Up. And he was known as the hardest dude out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, those were kind of two of his most famous songs, arguably, right? Dear Mama, Keep Your Head Up.
Brenda's Got a Baby
was like, one of those real early hits. And like even like his sort of posthumous hits were mostly things like Changes, right? I mean, it's interesting because he's kind of like known as like the voice of especially like West Coast gang life, like he really like he speaks for that experience. But when you think of like the songs he's most known for, they're not street songs.
No.
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, especially like we paint people who are in that life as like the irredeemable worst of the worst, right? And like they're chosen spokesperson, right? It wasn't like the industry that said like Pac is like he speaks for the streets, like no, like he means something to an awful lot of people. And it's not because necessarily, you know, he had all of these great street songs. In fact, I mean, I think it's probably harder to locate in his catalog like the great street songs, right? Like there's not a Tupac Shook Ones Part 2 that I can think of off the top of my head.
Right.
So it's interesting, though, that he becomes kind of like the soul of the streets.
But he was known as the thug.
But he was known for like thug rap. Like that was such a big part of his sort of like public persona.
Right. But there's the balance again.
Yeah.
He showed you both sides. And that's what the world is.
Yeah.
It's not one thing. It's not, the world isn't hit him up all the time. And it's not keep your head up all the time either.
Exactly.
It's both.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I bring him up so much because he's known as, you know, one of the greats. But I feel like if he did it, and he's respected all over the world for it, why can't I? You know,
yeah,
that's
absolutely
my motivation, to keep it as real as possible, man. And he didn't even have children, but
yeah,
you just have to talk about everything. I want to touch on everything.
Yeah. I mean, to your mind, what are the sort of like realist things that don't get discussed enough?
In rap?
Yeah.
I think love.
Okay.
Love, you know what I'm saying? I feel like every album should have that type of song. Even when I think about Jay-Z. And if people remember, Jay-Z used to do that on his albums. He had a song cry on Blueprint.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a Soon You'll Understand. And he got away from that. And it's funny because he's in love, like married.
I know.
But where's the song about your wife?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like the kids look up to these guys. Maybe if they were doing a song like that, they would feel like it's cool for them to do it as well.
Yeah. I mean, the sort of two songs I can think of that Jay-Z has put together kind of in that vein is like the Bonnie and Clyde one he did ages ago. And that's kind of early on. Like,
yeah,
they're still dating sort of thing. And he has the song on the Magna Carta album, whose title I can't remember, but that I actually started to get some radio play. But it seems to, I mean, they're both kind of examples where he's sort of describing that their relationship in a sort of like street context, even though like by the time they met, and frankly, Beyonce was like never from the streets. And
right,
so,
right.
So there's that, right? And like, she's not Bonnie, right?
No, not at all.
And, you know, but so like, you don't actually get what I imagine their relationship is a lot more like, which is like conversations about what school Blue should go to.
Right.
And you know, like how we're going to schedule our time around these like tour dates that we both have and, you know,
right,
like that sort of thing. I mean, is that obviously like Jay-Z is a brilliant, marketer as well as artist. Like he knows what's going to sell. Right. But is it disappointing to sort of see that even sometimes when, especially like bigger name artists tackle these subjects, they do it in a way that isn't really that honest to the thing they're talking about, especially when it's something like love, right? Like we can't have our James Baldwin moments and talk about love.
Yeah, man. I think so. Like I said, art is an imitation of life. If they were talking about certain things more, then I think people would imitate that. Mm. Like in the 90s.
Yeah.
I joke about this, but with people, but it's true. It's like, remember when it was cool to like be in a relationship?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
if you didn't have a girlfriend, you were looked at
like,
as a clown.
Yeah.
Now if you have a girlfriend, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You
yeah
should be doing you and stay single. It used to be cool, and the music was a reflection of that.
Because
there was a lot of love songs in the 90s. And not that hip hop has to be one big love fest. I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, of course.
But you have to have the balance. You shouldn't have an album 12, 13 songs of all street stuff.
I just
don't get it. I just don't get it. It's just showing one side of the world, man. So we need more of that. Talk about the children. Talk about more positive things. That's it.
Absolutely. You know, I really appreciate how much time you've given me. Let me just ask, you mentioned Bandcamp. Is there a specific URL people should look for in terms of looking up your music on Bandcamp?
Tamar.bandcamp.com, T-A-H-M-A-R.
Okay.
Also, I'm on YouTube. Type in Tamar. Videos and interviews and stuff on there. I did like a Tamar Tuesday thing where I was putting out a new song every Tuesday.
Okay, yeah.
Rapping
yeah
over like classic beats and
yeah
stuff like that.
Okay.
And I just took some time off after that because that was a lot. Giving people a new song every week.
Yeah, that's...
And I put those two albums out 6 months apart.
Mm.
So it was a lot of material. I've been taking some time off just getting my thoughts together.
Sure.
But I want to put out something this winter.
Yeah, is there a new project kind of percolating there in the back of your head?
The song Autumn I just put out.
Yeah.
It was just with the season changing and all of that. So I might go off of that and just put out something in the wintertime. But it's music always in my mind. Sure, I still have songs tucked away that I haven't even released.
Timing
is everything, though.
Of course, yeah.
And I just want to make sure that people are listening. I could put out songs all day, but if they're not paying attention, it just feels like a waste to me. So I just want to make sure the timing is right and I have people's attention and have a strong fan base, people that will support me. I'm not even really... Being famous isn't really important right now to me. It's just being heard. Just making sure people hear me, the right people hear me. It's not about being the number one artist in the world
right now.
Like that. But just being respected. That's it, as an MC.
Let me just ask, because you mentioned the Tuesday series that you had worked on. Do you have a favorite of like the classic beats? Like, is there one that is like, this is my beat?
Oh, man.
That's a hard question because there's a lot of great beats, especially from that era.
You know what? My favorite beats from that era, I probably didn't rap on. Because it's like, if they're so great, I don't want to touch it.
Okay.
I kind of feel like I'm disrespecting the artist.
Let's ask that question then. What are the untouchable beats for you?
Oh, man. Oh. Wow. Tupac, I wanted to rap over Tupac's Pain beat.
Okay.
From the Above the Rim soundtrack. I can't touch it. I did a Nas beat. I did the Get Down beat.
Okay.
From the Godson album. Yeah. But probably like New York State of Mind, something I wouldn't touch. It's just certain things that it's just perfect already.
Yeah.
If I'm not going to make it better than the original, I'm not going to touch it, man. That's how I feel about songs that people recreate. If it's not going to, you know, do any justice to the original, like, don't touch it, man. So, yeah, those are some. Some of the old RZA stuff that he did, I really wanted to rap over, you know, but nah, I just didn't touch it, man. Old Ghostface stuff. Yeah. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. One last rap nerd question. Iron Man versus Supreme Clientele, Ghostface.
Supreme Clientele for me.
Okay.
And I'm only saying that because when I think about it, I listen to that more.
Yeah.
Than Iron Man.
That's probably, I would have to say the same thing. Not because I have like a knock to offer against Iron
Man.
Not
at all.
Just because Supreme Clientele is Supreme Clientele.
It was perfect. Ghostface is very underrated, man.
Very. Especially in the Wu family, because there was a period, and it sort of began with Supreme Clientele, where he kind of held down the Wu brand by himself.
He did.
I mean... the two Fish Scale albums came out like in that era, and it was just like, you know, because by then meth had kind of tapered off. Raekwon wasn't even releasing stuff all that often, and when he did, it was like bulletproof wallets or like something that just was like, why?
Yeah,
how much money did you need?
This
feels like somebody give me a paycheck, I'll give you an album. You know, and then obviously, like, you know, you're not expecting like the minor members, you know, to drop albums that kind of keep it going. Considering like the run they had with like Liquid Swords, Only Built for Cuban Links, Iron Man, Tikal, you know, there was an era where it was like, man, Ghostface is the only one who's like kind of keeping this thing alive.
He made the best albums out of those. He's my favorite member.
Mm.
Method Man was more, you know, the girls liked him. He had the radio hit with Mary.
Yeah.
But out of Wu-Tang, when you Google Ghostface and look, he has like 13, 14 albums and they all were solid.
Yeah.
All of them. So he's very underrated. I'll put him in my top five.
Yeah.
I will.
That's interesting. I mean, my favorite Wu member was always Inspector Deck.
Oh, he's dope.
Cause he's, you know, he's obviously not like, he's not like the guy with the best voice but he like lyrically, I feel like of all the members, he has the most show stealing verses.
Yeah, from Triumph.
Yeah, I mean, Triumph, Cream, and just so many, like, even when I listened to a lot of the other albums, because as much as they were solo albums, albums like Liquid Swords or Iron Man or, you know, any of the early Wu stuff, they were all really Wu-Tang albums. Like, there's very few songs on any of those albums where other Wu members aren't somehow involved.
Yeah.
And so they always really were Wu-Tang productions. And on a lot of those solo albums, a lot of the best moments come from Deck.
Yep.
You know, he's just nasty, man. He is. As a lyricist, and, you know, and I'm a guy who kind of like really enjoys lyricism and the sort of technical aspects of rapping, just as a listener, as a consumer. And, you know, he delivers that in spades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wu-Tang was the groups. Where are the rap groups now?
Yeah.
Where are the, you know, and the record labels that we had? We don't have it anymore, man. Everybody's jumping. It seems like every collaboration is the same artist over and over again.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
There's no competitive nature anymore. Where are the battles?
Yeah. I mean, is it weird to see, like, right, like, battling for me wasn't really about, like, insults the way it has become now, right? And, like, even, you know, going back to, like, you know, Meth versus Chef, you know, it was about, like, who had the illest bars.
Yep.
Is it weird to as an artist to sort of see that transition happen?
Very weird. I mean, that's what we came up. It was all about being the best.
Yeah.
And now everybody's just cool with just being. And it's not even just in music. It's in sports, too.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant joining the team he lost to. Like, I don't know anything about that coming up, man. We wanted to beat.
Yeah, you wanted to beat the best.
Nobody wants to do that.
The Warriors are going to be nasty next year.
Yeah, like,
I mean, I do, you know, I'm excited to see what, you know, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant.
And Curry.
And, you know, and I mean, Draymond. That's, and Draymond. Like, that's a crazy team.
But
you're right.
How good can Durant feel when he wins?
But that's the thing. I mean, it's kind of like the early LeBron championships. It's like, you know, when you're split.
Yeah.
You're splitting that among three stars. And look, I mean, even Jordan had Pippen, and Pippen is a Hall of Fame basketball player. There's no question that Pippen was an incredible basketball talent that he had at his side. But it wasn't like, you know, he joined the Pistons in 91 because he wanted to play with Isaiah Thomas. And that gave him, like, that wasn't.
Mike
Isaiah had Detroit.
Done.
He had Chicago. And you were going to do, you know, it was like. Olajuwon had Houston and like
Barkley.
Yeah, you know, like, and I mean, hey, you know, some of those guys never won championships like Barkley because, you know, Mike was in the way.
He lost to Mike. That's fine.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's that Charles ran with Giants.
Yeah.
Like, nobody cares that he didn't win a championship. Right. It might sting him maybe a little bit, but we're all like, yo, you played with Giants and held your own. Like, we knew who you were.
Yep. He won MVP that season. They lost to Mike in the finals. That's what I'm saying. Same thing with music. There's nobody's trying to compete, man. And I don't know. That's just how we came up. I wanted to know who the best was. LL versus Cannabis.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even tell you the last good battle we had. Maybe it was Jada versus Beanie Siegel. Then the G-Unit thing came in. Then it started getting really disrespectful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially because in hip-hop, sometimes these sort of record beefs have a tendency to spill outside of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, as I get older, I always feel like, how am I supposed to feel about a dispute between two artists? You know, because I don't want to do anything that would encourage it to move beyond the music side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like, just as a genre, like, I mean, we lost Biggie. And we lost Pac in a very short span of time.
Yep.
And I think in light of that, it's a tragedy that we then went on to lose other artists. Like, I mean, some of these artists didn't die because of rap stuff. But, you know, when you see that violence sort of spill over from records to the streets, you feel like, man, this is a lesson we should have learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just an unfortunate, and, you know, we're seeing it now with, like, Game and Meek, you know, and, like, I mean, I don't know if it was related, but, like, somebody, like, shot up Game's vehicles, and it's like, come on, guys.
Seems like it's related.
Yeah, it seems related. It seems kind of coincidental, right? But you're kind of like, man, like, over some rap stuff. Like,
over some rap stuff, man.
You know.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
When Tupac and Biggie thing was, that East Coast, West Coast thing was, that was real beef.
Real.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't even go over there type thing. Like,
I mean, there are artists today from that era who have props just because they played shows in L.A. during that period. It
definitely.
Was like, no, yeah, like, we went and toured over there.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you're crazy, man. Like, it's so now it's not even, I don't take it seriously, man. But
yeah. Well, excellent. I really appreciate how much time you've given me. Tamar, Baltimore MC, keeping real hip hop alive. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, man. Anytime, man. Let's bring hip hop back.
Definitely.